In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
So glad you're joining us today here on the iSpy Radio Show, helping you get a little more intelligence on big government. Although today we were going to take a little break from all of that, it being the beginning of the Christmas season and Advent, that is until Nancy Pelosi stepped to the microphone. The day after those disastrous, for the Democrats, those disastrous hearings by the constitutional experts. Experts who made it pretty clear that they hold contempt for the people that the Constitution is designed to protect, the American people, and the President of the United States. The Constitution and government set up by our founders was never designed to be majority rule. The Democrats have never gotten over Hillary losing the electoral vote, but winning the popular vote. First off, if you take out California, Trump wins both the electoral vote and the popular vote. The Constitution was set up to protect the rest of the country from a single large population state. Otherwise, they would have called it the United States of New York. Secondly, the government was never designed to have a presidency that is the whipping boy of Congress. Why? Because Congress is not the executive branch. To believe you have constant oversight means that you think you're the executive. You're not. You pass laws and then you hand it over to the president, the executive. Congress has run amok. It now thinks that it's the legislative, executive, and, apparently, the judicial branch with all of those hearings. Besides, did you know that it is the president's obligation to both investigate and ask for investigations into corruption to ensure U.S. taxpayer dollars are not misspent? Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution, he, the president, shall receive ambassadors and other public ministers. He shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. Faithfully executed. That means making sure we're not giving away money that Congress appropriated and just dropping it into a corruption swamp never to be seen again. In addition, we have a treaty between the U.S. and Ukraine specifically about sharing information on corruption. The Constitution and a treaty. And yet the Democrats want to impeach Trump for following the law. As we've said, I suspect what really kicked all of this impeachment hysteria off was that Trump was and is closing in on corruption by the Democrats. And that CrowdStrike server is really at the heart of it because it launched the Russia collusion hoax. The Democrats hid that server, which they said was hacked by Russia, and all those emails given to WikiLeaks, they hid that from the FBI. And if the FBI could now finally examine it to see whether or not Russia did hack it, and it turns out they didn't, well, then the entire last 3 years have been an entire sham. And if you're innocent, why would you want to hide it? Or, if Biden and the Democrats are so innocent, why would they flip out when Trump wanted to investigate? If they're innocent, wouldn't they welcome it instead of launching an impeachment to stop him from looking? We'll talk all of that with James Hurston in the second half of the show, but for now, as I said, it is Advent season, so there's no better time to talk about the reason for the season. And we'd like to welcome back Dallas Jenkins. He's the professor, producer, and director of The Chosen, the first multi-season series, not only about Jesus, but the people that he selected to have around him, The Chosen. Dallas, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm glad to be called the professor. I'll take that title as well.
Yeah, there you go. Well, for people that haven't had a chance to catch your series yet, you know, I just highly recommend this. It really makes the people and stories in the Bible just spring to life and do so in a new and exciting way. And one of the scenes that I found to be very interesting that caught my attention early on, there's this scene between Peter and his wife. When he comes back from fishing, it was on the Sabbath, and he's just kind of sneaking in the doors. It seems weird a little bit to think that the characters in the Bible had these very real lives outside of their brief appearances on the page of the Bible. Was it a little weird for you guys, maybe even a little surreal, for you to be sitting there writing these stories for such well-known and beloved biblical people?
Absolutely. It was surreal at times. And I think when we were writing, on one hand, it was odd. On the other hand, it was daunting. I mean, I feel a lot of pressure to get this right. You know, I feel like God chose these people, these heroes of the faith, And that was certainly puts a lot of pressure on to do justice to their stories. But then at the other, on the other hand, it was very exciting. You mentioned the marriage. You mentioned Simon coming home. There's a scene in episode one where he comes home having done something that his wife wouldn't have necessarily approved of, which was working on the Sabbath. Of course, no Jews would have approved of it, but Simon felt desperate. The Romans were oppressing the Jewish people. He felt like he was going to lose everything financially. And so he felt like he just had to do whatever it took. And while we were shooting some of those scenes between Simon and his wife, I remember thinking to myself, I've never seen a marital argument in a Bible project before. And then I realized I've never seen a marriage in a Bible project before. We have several scenes in the show between Nicodemus and his wife and Simon and his wife where the opportunity to explore what marriage would have been like back then and to also portray the fact that these people who we've only seen in two dimensions previously, like on the page in the Bible, and very small amounts. We see verses here and there scattered throughout Scripture about these people. The Bible didn't see fit to spend lots of time on some of these people, but Jesus spent a lot of time on these people, and we wanted to attempt to portray that in some way that humans today, viewers today, could connect with. And the realization that people 2,000 years ago were the same as they are today, they just had different circumstances, but also relatable problems, we really were excited to portray that.
Sure. Like paying the tax man. That's certainly a lot of us are worried about. But you mentioned spouses, and you're right. You really don't see that in a lot of films. And the Bible itself really doesn't spend a lot of time with their spouses. You know, it's kind of funny when you first see Peter's wife, there's almost this momentary pause. Wait a minute, was Peter married or wasn't he? And how did you draw some of your inspiration on that? Because I'm not exactly terribly familiar with Christian tradition about what people have either written about or thought about some of the spouses for these saints that we have.
Well, we know that Simon was married because it mentions in the Scripture that he had a mother-in-law.
Right.
So that was, that of course was easy to figure out once we, you know, when we know that. And then we know that we can gather things from Peter's personality in the Gospels. We can read all the times that he was very tempestuous and temperamental and very impulsive. And so then you can just, you know, easily imagine then what it'd be like to be married to someone like that. And so, and what must his wife have been thinking when her husband meets the Messiah and follows him and gives up everything to do so? Would that add pressure, or would she be excited about it? We're able to explore all those questions. Now, with Nicodemus, for example, who's another one of our main characters, we know that many of the Pharisees, many of the religious leaders were married, if not most of them. So then we're able to say, well, we know in John chapter 3 that Nicodemus meets Jesus at night and tells him that he believes that Jesus must be the Son of God. Most of the Pharisees didn't believe that. In fact, most of the Pharisees were very angry about that notion. So the fact that he meets him at night tells us that he's meeting in secret. The fact that when we meet him later in the Gospels, he speaks up in defense of Jesus, but in a very general way, like, oh, we're supposed to give him a trial, let's be fair. But he doesn't come right out and say that he's a follower of Christ. So knowing that he was probably married, we're able to surmise that it probably was difficult for his wife and his fellow Pharisees and his students to accept that he would believe that Jesus was the Messiah, because it would have meant giving up quite a bit of their status, would have meant giving up quite a bit of their money. And so, again, when you realize those things and then you put them into a context of what human beings typically are like, it actually becomes easy. Well, I shouldn't say easy, but it becomes possible to be plausible. We're not claiming to be Scripture. We're not Scripture. We're not a replacement for the Bible. These are, you know, we're not, we say right off the top that viewers are encouraged to read the Gospels. We're not adding to Scripture. We're not Scripture. However, we believe very strongly that, especially with consulting from biblical and historical scholars, and with our own understanding of human behavior, we can make plausible portrayals of what their lives would have been like and the decisions they would have made when we combine Scripture with history.
Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. You can watch not just the first episode of The Chosen for free, but also the pilot episode. As we mentioned last time, the pilot is a short Christmas story that Dallas had done for his church family that really launched all of this. That is available on YouTube and also through The Chosen app, and we'll link both of those up on iSpyRadio.com. coming up, an exciting new way so that you and people all around the globe can watch The Chosen. And welcome back. We're talking to Dallas Jenkins. He's the director and producer for the largest crowdfunded media project of all time, a multi-season series about the life of Christ. It's called The Chosen, and we'll put links to how you can watch that up on iSpyRadio.com. Dallas, just a follow-up question from that last segment there. I've always found it interesting that Jesus chose who he did to have around him. They weren't saints before he chose them. There were no rabbis in his disciples. There were no scholars. And I really enjoy that about your films because there's a certain grittiness to those characters, which I think makes them both more realistic and relatable. But I'm curious, do you get any pushback from people with your particular interpretations of these figures?
Yeah, that's a great question. We use the term the before. We'll say, and we did a devotional book as well that's a companion to the show. It's called The Chosen, 40 Days with Jesus. And that book is available with the show on our app and on Amazon and whatnot. And the reason I bring up the book is because the first entry in the devotional is called Before. And we describe this notion of how God in our current lives and his son Christ 2,000 years ago entered into the before. All of us have a moment or a time in our lives that we can define as before we met God or before these people met Jesus in the flesh. And who we were before we met Christ is oftentimes very different than who we are after we meet Christ. Mm-hmm. And what you often see in Bible projects is the after. And in fact, even in the Bible, it oftentimes doesn't spend much time on who someone was before they met Christ. In the Gospels, they say, and then Jesus walked along the beach, the shore, and he saw Simon and he called him to follow him. They'll introduce Mary Magdalene and say, Jesus was with Mary Magdalene who had seven demons cast out of her. That's all it says. We believe that by introducing you to what their lives may have been like before they met Christ, it makes those encounters even more impactful.
Yes.
And so we introduce, if Simon was a tempestuous, impulsive, at times roller coaster ride of emotions to the fact where at one time Jesus called him a rock and said, I'm going to build my church on you. And then at another time called Peter Satan and told him to get behind him. Clearly, Simon must have been even crazier before he met Christ.
Yeah.
So we portrayed some of these people before they met Christ so that those encounters are more impactful. And we believe that if you can see Jesus through the eyes of those who actually met him, you can be impacted in the same way that they were. Now, to your question, do we get some blowback from that? Sometimes we do. It tends to be from more traditional Christians, people who are maybe a little bit more old school, who are used to more, Sunday school. I'm not even saying this negatively, but Sunday school type presentations of Jesus, traditional Bible stories where the project just goes from Bible verse to Bible verse, miracle to miracle, and it's just an exact portrayal of what was said in Scripture. Now, we don't change anything in Scripture. We feel very honored to portray what God saw fit to say. However, we do add backstory and historical and cultural context, and with that, we believe that portraying what these people were like before they met Christ is a very important way for the viewer to connect with them. So we've gotten a little bit of pushback, but it's been very small because once people see these episodes, I can't emphasize to you enough how often we hear every single day from people whose lives have been transformed. And they say, when Jesus met Mary Magdalene, my heart soared because I had identified with her. When I saw Matthew the tax collector, who was so hated by the Jews and disrespected by the Romans for being a tax collector, seeing him and identifying with his loneliness and his isolation, the struggles that Simon Peter had, the struggles that Nicodemus had in his heart for what direction he wanted to go, those are relatable. And so when they encountered Christ and when they were forced to make a choice, people have been so emotionally and spiritually inspired that it's been it's far, far, far outweighed any discomfort that we've had. And if some people are uncomfortable with it, that's probably a good thing.
Well, it's good storytelling, though, because with any character, whether it's a book or film, you've got to be able to show how that person changes as a result of the events of their life and the choices that they make. And And so I just find it very compelling storytelling. You already have episodes 1 through 4 out there. Last time we talked, you've got now a trailer for episodes 5 through 8. But what's really exciting is you guys, Jeffrey Harmon of VidAngel, who works with you to help distribute this, he really came up with a very innovative way to really spread your reach, not just here, not just across the country, but really globally. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about this innovation?
Yeah, this is fascinating. So I'm going to set this up by telling you a verse from the book of Isaiah that started inspiring us. The verse is Isaiah 43:19, and it says, "Behold, I am doing a new thing." And we realize that that's really the motto of The Chosen, is that we're really doing a new thing. The way it was financed is new. It's the number one crowdfunded media project of all time. The content is new. It's the first ever multi-season show about the life of Christ. And the app that this show is on is new. You can watch the app. You can download the app for free wherever you get apps, whether it's iTunes or the App Store or Google Play. And you can download the entire first season onto your, or the app on your phone, and you can literally connect it to any of your streaming devices. So whether you've got a Roku or Apple TV or a Fire Stick or Chromecast, you don't need a subscription or anything. Now, here's the problem with that, and that brings me to the other thing that is a new thing, is streaming costs money. Every time that you or I or anyone watches something on a streaming service, it actually costs that service money. Especially around the world, it's even more expensive. So when you watch something on Netflix, or someone watches something on Netflix from the Philippines, per se, it actually costs them money. So how do we make this free around the world? Well, it's actually not free. And if we just released it internationally immediately and just made it free for everybody, we would not be able to afford it. It would cost us literally tens of millions of dollars. So what Jeffrey came up with was this idea of pay it forward. And we say to you on the app, if you're watching this right now, it was paid for by someone else. Our original investors gave us the opportunity to provide these episodes for you. So we're hoping that if you want to see that this show get around the world in multiple countries, we can't afford to do it. But if you want to pay it forward and allow 10, 20, thousands of people, based on how much you're able to afford and want to give, that will allow people around the world to be able to see this. And then by doing that, it also allows us to be able to finance future episodes and seasons, because we want this show to be done for 7 or 8 seasons. And it's going to take probably $100 million to do 7 or 8 seasons. So in the last week, since season one was completed and released, so now all 8 episodes are available. You can download them and watch them on the app now. We have been seen in over 125 countries around the world. And specifically, like we just found out this morning, we're completely viral in the Philippines. And that is because people in the States, and now people around the world, as they watch it, are going, hey, this is great. We love to be able to see this. And we're going to go ahead and pay it forward because this meant something to us. This show meant something to us. Well, now, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, what I really love about this app is that it allows you two things. One, you know, you don't have to give it directly to a friend. You're just making it available so somebody else can see it. So you log in and you can see that Joe from Idaho is making this available for you. But then what's also cool about this is that Joe from Idaho gets notified that, hey, somebody in India or China watches because of you. I think that is just a tremendous idea. And I could see where that could really impact not just, you know, how films are made, but also how charitable giving is really done throughout the world. I just love the fact that you're connecting the people that are being generous with somebody that's receiving that. Let's go ahead and take a break. Come back. We'll have more with Dallas Jenkins. Stay with us. Talking today to Dallas Jenkins. He is the writer, director, and producer for the largest crowdfunded media project of all time, a multi-season series about the life of Christ entitled The Chosen. You can watch the first 4 episodes for free. Just find The Chosen app at either iTunes or you can Google Play, wherever you find apps. We'll link those up on iSpyRadio.com. And Dallas, in the time that we have left here with you, you know, I've often said that well-to-do conservatives or Christians, I really wish they would be putting their money into content creation and production studios that will reflect their beliefs. So many times we see these people put in millions and millions of dollars into a 30-second or 60-second political ad, which will air during a one-hour program that often embraces lifestyles completely opposite of their own beliefs. or that are expressed in those ads, that content, that program really, is going to have a far longer lasting impact than that little commercial, which a lot of people will speed through anyway. So you guys are crowdfunded, so fortunately you don't have that. But when you have pitched films or projects to people who share your beliefs, that have the kind of financing for that sort of thing, do you run into resistance from people who just don't see the value in creative endeavors?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we've experienced a little bit of that, but I've been doing movies and TV for 20 years, and it was both in Hollywood and then also in private financing. So, you know, a project will either get financed by a big studio or, like you're talking about, investors. Typically, they're going to invest in something that they believe in. I've had moderate success in both areas, but what I got tired of was waiting for a big studio or a big investor to lower its scepter to me, to allow me into the hallowed halls of their approval. And I don't even say that with any bitterness. I just say that, you know, at a point you become tired of trying to be approved and hoping that each project that you do fits the standard of what someone is looking for. And so we just decided in this case to go around that. And one of the things that happened because of that, and as you talked about in your first segment, you mentioned the short film that we made. So we did a short film about the birth of Christ from the perspective of the shepherds. And we put that out on social media. It's a small thing that I did for my church's Christmas Eve service. And I shot it on my friend's farm in Illinois. And it went viral. And at the end of it, we would say to people, we're trying to do this multi-season show about the life of Christ. And we don't want it to be owned by anyone else. We want to be able to control the content. And so when we said that to people, and I was coming off of a career disappointment, I was no one famous. We were starting from scratch. But over 19,000 people invested over $10 million in breaking the all-time crowdfunding record. And being able to just go directly to the people, you know, the people who invested $200 or $100 or $500 were just as valuable and just as necessary as those who invested $100,000. And we had a few of those as well. But I think that what inspired some of the wealthier people to get involved was they were seeing all the momentum that was coming from the crowd. And when you go to the crowd and you get this large group of people who are just so passionate about it, and they believe that they need to see this so badly, that makes a statement. And it says that there's a lot of momentum and a lot of interest in something like this. So when you ask, you know, have I gotten resistance in the past? The answer is yes, but to some extent, but honestly, I don't care anymore. And I don't really know anymore what people would say, what a big investor would say, because I'm just done going to them for now. You know, when I say for now, I mean now and forever, hopefully, because we don't need it anymore. We don't need to fit someone else's standard, because we've shown that people want this show. And when they see it, they become even more passionate about it. So having a crowd of people, of thousands and thousands of people who have invested their time and their money into this show, is way more exciting and way more attention getting and gives us way more momentum than if we found one studio or one investor to put up the money in. So we just don't need to play by the same rules anymore. And that's become exciting. So I just don't get wrapped up in that anymore. And it makes me, I think as a man, it's made me a better man, because I'm not seeking someone else's approval as much as I used to.
Well, and what great dividends too for people that did invest in this. I mean, this is now being shown globally. I just think that's so incredibly awesome. Are you seeing more Christians trying to get into film, despite the anti-Christian bias that we see so often in Hollywood and really in the film industry as a whole?
Yes, and I think that's been happening over the last several years, because yes, there is a bias, but there's been a couple of examples of films or programs that have been so successful that's inspired younger filmmakers to do this. When I was growing up, young men and women weren't encouraged at all to get into the film business if they were, you know, as an opportunity to tell a faith-based story. That's changed a little bit. And I'm hopeful that, especially with shows like The Chosen, that show you that you don't even necessarily need approval of a studio to do it, it's going to open up even more opportunities and more interest. And I think the more, you know, I think the strength in numbers and the more people that are interested in doing this and training to become filmmakers, the better chances you have of having good filmmakers emerge.
Yes.
So that's important. But I do give people advice too. They'll ask me, well, how do I raise the kind of money you raised for your project? And I tell them up front, this was a bit of a God thing. This was an outlier. You know, again, I made this short film on my friend's barn and you know, farm. I don't think you can predict that it's going to be seen by tens of millions of people and around the world. But I think it does illustrate that you have to first do something that people really want. So you have to make a short film or some sort of test that will tell you whether people are excited about it or not. And if they are, then you can keep going. And if they're not, right, then you can shift course. But yep, that allows you to test the waters.
Yep. So in the real quick, the 30 seconds that we have left here with you, your favorite Christmas movie of all time and why?
Well, that's an easy question to answer because it's also my favorite movie of all time, and that's It's a Wonderful Life. I see it every single year. I weep like a baby every single time. And it's also inspired me in a lot of my storytelling, and here's why. Because that movie takes its time to show you the pain and the sadness so that it justifies and earns the absolute joy that comes in the end. And that's one of the models that we follow in The Chosen, is we really make sure that when those moments of joy come, we've earned them because we didn't shy away from showing you some of the pain that led to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Dallas Jenkins, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're now talking to James Herson. He is a New York Times bestselling author. You know him from Tales from the Left Coast. James, it is great to talk to you.
Well, it's great to be with you.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to my producer off air there, and the first three segments were about Christianity and Advent, and now we're kind of shifting to the devil. Not you. We're going to be talking about Nancy Pelosi.
Right. Really? But Nancy Pelosi's always talking about how she's praying.
Yeah.
Says she's praying. That's it. But it's a good question. Who is she praying to?
Yes, that's always
a
good thing.
That's a great question.
Well, you know, she'd have somebody to pray to if they hadn't been kicking God out of their platform.
Well, that's right. They kick God out of their platform, and Nancy Pelosi presides over a party that stands for the proposition that babies after they're born should be allowed to die and not given medical attention.
Yeah.
So she needs to do some praying.
Yeah, she sure does. So we're talking to you on Thursday, the day of. I'm still really reeling from this notion that Nancy is portraying herself as they're trying to take out King George and they're the new American Patriots. I mean, that is just beyond the pale. But just the fact that they're plowing through with these drafting articles of impeachment, it really seems rather odd, because just the day before they had this hearing with scholars allegedly weighing in on their opinion rather than evidence, which I thought came off rather badly. And then now here they are the very next day plowing through with these articles of impeachment. It really reminds me of the launch of all of this, too, when they couldn't even wait 24 hours to read this transcripts for themselves, but instead they launch with these impeachment inquiries anyway, before knowing anything. I mean, it's the same in this case. I'm just floored that Nancy thinks that she's the new patriot here. What are your thoughts on all this?
Well, I think that Nancy Pelosi has abdicated her leadership position and given it to the squad. In other words, given it to the far left Marxist component of the Democrat Party, which has taken over the party, which has taken over the campaign for the presidential nomination, because we see them racing to the left. And, you know, she got herself in a box simply because for some inexplicable reason, she allowed the face of the impeachment effort to be Adam Schiff, a man with zero credibility, with no scruples, and has proven it by fabricating a conversation, lying about his contacts with the so-called whistleblower, and now engaging in possibly illegal surveillance of a member of the press and one of his colleagues, John Solomon and Devin Nunes and others. And then Jerry Nadler takes over in one day. Jerry Nadler. Now, remember, the goal here is really public relations. The goal for the Democrat Party is to change the attitude of the public. So under the Schiff hearings, they were able to change it the wrong direction. President Trump's approval numbers went up. Support for impeachment went down. Jerry Nadler in one day managed to produce a public relations disaster where the headline that came out of the entire 8.5 hours was their star witness attacking a 13-year-old. And of course, getting the ire, and of course, I'm talking about President Trump's son, Barron, in a stupid joke, but then also Melania uncharacteristically took to the social media to tell this person that she ought to be ashamed of herself, which resulted in a forced, half-hearted apology. These smug, condescending members of academia were the worst possible group of people to communicate with the public. And the only person that had any kind of authenticity was Jonathan Turley, who's a liberal and touted his liberal credentials, but didn't attack anybody. He basically said there was insufficient process, insufficient evidence. And I think what he pointed out, and I think this is the reason, they're really underselling, and underestimating the intelligence of the American people.
Oh,
people
absolutely.
Can pull out the impeachment portion of the Constitution and see with their own eyes the intent of the drafters, because they use the term crime. And we all know that in the United States, the standard of proof for any kind of crime is beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a ton of proof. And the crimes that were mentioned in the Constitution are very serious crimes. Treason, which is a capital crime. Bribery, which is why Adam Schiff started talking about bribery. But they've made a mockery, and they, meaning Schiff, Nadler, Pelosi, and the Democrats, have made a mockery of something that truly should be somber. And should be, it's probably the most serious power that Congress has other than declaring war. And that is the idea that Congress can undo an election of a president. The standard of proof has to be higher than that of a mere criminal proceeding. And they've turned it into a total politicized, debased procedure, which I think they've essentially destroyed the integrity of the impeachment process, perhaps forever. That's why Jonathan Turley's face looks so sad.
Yeah.
Because he's someone who dedicated himself to those founding principles and teaching those founding principles.
Well, I thought it was really interesting what he had to say. He said, if you impeach a president, if you make a high crime and misdemeanor out of going to the courts, it is an abuse of power. It's your abuse of power. You're doing precisely what you're criticizing the president of doing. I mean, if people didn't catch Turley, they really need to find video snippets of him on YouTube and whatnot. We'll try to link some of those up on iSpyRadio.com. Everyone stay with us. We need to take a break. Come back, we'll be talking more with James Hurston about the Democrats lurching toward impeachment and why that may be a really bad idea. Welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to James Hurston. He's a best-selling author. You can find a lot of his current work, though, up on jameshurston.com. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. Got some great articles talking about this latest impeachment hoax that's being pushed forward. We'll talk a couple of those in a few moments here. But I want to go back to something that you had said, because I really found it very deeply troubling that the Democrats are subpoenaing and now attacking a journalist, John Solomon, who, and really, I think, trying to discredit him and all of his terrific work exposing the corruption that's going on in Ukraine. In previous discussions with him, I really believe that Ukraine is at the heart of Democrat corruption. And when they heard that Trump was sniffing around about Ukraine and getting close to exposing it all, and also the whole CrowdStrike server, I really think that is what set all this out and why the Democrats have just lost total control of themselves and thrown caution to the wind because they are desperate to hide what really happened. You have a great article there, Why CrowdStrike May Be the Real Reason for the Impeachment Charade. Tell us your thoughts on that.
Well, it's exactly what you brought up, is at the center of the origin story of how this whole kind of mechanism started, this scheme, this cabal to try to undo the Trump presidency using very important governmental tools that are supposed to be protecting the public. That begins in Ukraine, and it begins with really the story of the DNC hack, where the John Podesta emails were released via WikiLeaks, and that somehow that hack, it's been just accepted like dogma that the Russians did it. And of course, the Russians did it supports the whole Russia narrative, which the Democrat Party has never let go of. And they're going to even include it reportedly in the articles of impeachment. So the idea that hack was caused by Russian agents was due to an investigation that was supposed to be led by the FBI. But the FBI, in an uncharacteristic way, allowed CrowdStrike, which had been brought into the investigation by a law firm named Perkins Coie. Perkins Coie was the cutout law firm that hired Fusion GPS, that set all the dominoes in motion to create the Christopher Steele dossier and begin really what appears to be one of the worst scandals in the history of the country. And so CrowdStrike got a hold of the actual physical hardware and did supposed forensic analysis. But nobody's seen really their report, with the exception of FBI headed by James Comey. And James Comey was perfectly satisfied not to get the evidence, the hardware, the forensics, which President Trump mentioned. He mentioned one time the word CrowdStrike, mm-hmm. this firm, and he mentioned the servers. And this apparently sends chills up the spines, not just of Democrats, but of the media, because of late, the media has been bringing up CrowdStrike, but only in this context, saying, oh, yes, the president brought up CrowdStrike, trying to bring up a conspiracy theory that's been debunked. Yeah. All of a sudden, we hear in the media, conspiracy theory debunked. Where have we heard that before? The media is saying that about Joe Biden and his son and Burisma and China. That all that is a conspiracy theory debunked.
It's kind of
so when the
not
media
a
says that, that's an indication that that's something with unanswered questions that needs to be looked into. The company CrowdStrike is founded by a guy who is a senior fellow at a group called the Atlantic Council.
Yes.
And all you have to know about the Atlantic Council, they loved the Clintons and they hate Russia, and they're financed by a Ukrainian billionaire. Now, this company, CrowdStrike, has been working for the government of Ukraine, because in Ukraine, cybersecurity has been a big issue because there have been allegations of Russian hacking. And they've done studies that have been highly criticized for their lack of rigor and lack of science. And this CrowdStrike has an axe to grind. In many ways, is a biased organization, never should have been selected or trusted on their own with no other opinions. And so this is a very sensitive issue, and it brings up the whole idea of the Ukrainian meddling, and one Alexandra Chalupa, a DNC yes. operative who was in the Ukraine digging up dirt. It's where they first got a release from the Ukrainian government that ensnared Paul Manafort and created the initial charges against him. So it's
I just find it very interesting that server is even still in existence. I mean, I would have just thought it would have gone the way of Hillary's hammer or been recycled as part of a routine upgrade. But to me, what it really says is that the Ukrainians have kept it not for evidence, but for leverage. And I think that is what set the Democrats off.
Yeah, if it is really in existence, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. If the Ukrainians have it, I mean, this company since has gone public. I mean, they have a presence all over the world, really. So if it's not in the Ukraine, it's probably at the bottom of the sea somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point is, even the discussion of CrowdStrike, the discussion of the hack, supposed hack. I mean, there's been lots of reports that indicate that rather than a hack, it was phishing. You know, what's called spear phishing,
right, with a PH,
and that somebody let people, because I think it was some ridiculous password that was John Podesta.
He essentially opened the door to him. Okay, let's go and take a break there. Come back. What happens at the Senate could sink the Democrats. Say this. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with James Hurston talking about the Democrats' latest impeachment hoax and pushing this now into an actual articles of impeachment. And James has a great article up on his site, jameshurston.com, Why Democrats Should Fear a Senate Trial. In that, you write about why the Democrats should not want the impeachment process to head over to the Senate and, in fact, may rue the day. Why do you say that?
Well, it's clearly because the Republicans control the Senate. What the Senate has, according to the Constitution, a trial means a prosecution case and a defense case, and the Republicans will be able to control that process, allow witnesses to be called. They've already indicated, both Lindsey Graham, Doug Collins have said, Doug Collins being from the House, it's House members who actually conduct the trial. Hmm. And they want to call, obviously, they want to call the so-called whistleblower, who we can't name his name, Eric Chiaramella. I think it's pronounced Chiaramella.
I think
and,
so, yeah.
Should I say it again? Eric Chiaramella.
I'm pretty sure that it is pronounced Eric Chiaramella.
Eric Chiaramella. Anyway, they're going to call him. They're talking about calling the Bidens and the greatest witness, Adam Schiff, who is a fact witness, who has evidence of the way this whole impeachment thing started. You put Adam Schiff on the stand, and, you know, I know he's really someone that habitually lies, but it would be, having him under oath, I think, would be very helpful.
Yeah.
And especially if they can get some documents at the same time. And they can bring out the origin of this case. They can also get evidence from John Durham's probe into the whole cabal and how it resulted in the Mueller investigation. And so it'll bring out a lot of very unpleasant things for the Democrats, a lot of those debunked conspiracy theories. And the other thing, of course, at the end, the president will be the case will be dismissed. They won't get a removal because they need a 2/3 supermajority, which would mean 20 plus senators who are Republican voting to convict. Since we've not seen any evidence that's admissible,
no,
that's not going to happen, and everybody knows that. Plus, people like Joe Manchin that rely on a very pro-Trump population to get elected. Joe Manchin is not going to vote to convict. So even if there are people like Lisa Murkowski, possibly, and Mitt Romney says he's not for this impeachment. We'll see. But even if they got a few, you know, five renegades to vote with the Democrats, it's not enough. And everybody knows the president is going to claim victory, and his voice is going to be quite loud at the rallies, using his Twitter account, at press conferences. He's been able to overcome the propaganda press so well. I think he will. So I think it's the Democrats at some level somehow believe that if they pass articles of impeachment, they're going to create some sort of stigma they can use in the election since they have no issues to run on.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to work at all.
No, I don't see it working even remotely. It's really been so weird because so much of this simply ignores reality. It's all about what they believe, their opinions, but they move this forward as if it's reality. It really is rather bizarre. And plus, when this gets to the Senate, if people thought Trump fought hard before, they haven't seen anything yet. But I do think it's going to be very fascinating in terms of the witnesses that can be called. They can now actually subpoena that CrowdStrike server that we were talking about.
Well, that's exactly right. And all of the senators who are running for president, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, now not Kamala Harris, she dropped out, Cory Booker, they're all going to have to go physically to D.C., sit in the Senate, and they can't speak. They'll have to just sit and listen at while the House members conduct this. And I don't know what the, if Schiff is called by the Republicans as a witness, he should recuse himself from being a House manager.
Yeah.
But knowing the way these people have worked, he probably won't.
No, I doubt it. You know, in the 30 seconds we have left with you, unfortunately, we are up against the clock. Before we let you go, what's your favorite Christmas movie and why?
Well, It's a Wonderful Life, of course. it's a beautiful Capra film, timeless, and made with a theistic moral worldview, has a wonderful message and context.
Yes.
And so, I'm probably not going to recommend any contemporary Christmas movie.
No. Well, that makes it two for two for It's a Wonderful Life. James, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sure it's all a coincidence that the Democrats' next big impeachment hearing is on Monday, which just happens to be the same day that the IG report is due to come out. Of course, it's not a coincidence because Democrats aren't leaders concerned about America. They're marketers to keep themselves in power. It's why Nancy mindlessly goes to the mic the day after a disastrous hearing for the Democrats. They have a focus group tested product rollout, and they're sticking to it. You know, I sure hope that CrowdStrike server is in a very secure offsite location. I wonder how much taxpayer dollars Democrats would spend to get that server, dead or alive. Links to the chosen app and lots more on iSpyRadio.com. Check those out, share them, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.